Hello, you're listening to a Zen Studies Society podcast. To learn more about our community of Zen Buddhist practitioners, please visit zenstudies.org.
So thank you so much for being here. Thank you, Shinge Roshi, for inviting me to speak. I wanted to share some thoughts about this bodhisattva path that we walk together. Oh, you're also close. Look out there. That's nice. It's cozy.
You should.
It's kind of an indulgence to speak on this because you all taught me what it looks like and how to walk this path. But I want to share some of the difficulties that come up for me sometimes. And also the great freedom that I feel when I let go of those things. So just a little experiment. Push your hands out and just completely relax. Take a deep breath, slow breath. And just let your hands just be there the way they want to be. Take a look at them. And if you're like most people, right, your hands are kind of curled up, right? Your fingers start to curl up, like we're grabbing something, right? It feels like that's what hands are for, like for grabbing onto things. And that might not be like a scientific thing that that's what hands are for, or that some kind of evolutionary thing has happened where we just naturally are like this. But for me, it's a reminder of how grabby I can be. And so I look at my hands and I think, what are you holding on to? I've been noticing more and more how I walk this bodhisattva path with certain limits, right? And maybe I let out a little line, little by little, over 20 years, maybe a little. But then when we step back at that 20 years, it's still all not that much. As a society, we're pretty stingy with money and with things, and even with free things like compliments to other people and forgiveness and goodwill, that there's this holding back that is kind of normal in society. So we, kind of do it. And when we don't want to hold back, I feel funny about it sometimes, like weird. And so I've just been noticing that dynamic. So I look to the depictions of Avalokiteshvara for inspiration sometimes. And there's a lot of them, so I won't go into them here. But all of them. But some of the things that come up for me where I really appreciate is, first of all, that Avalokiteshvara is not depicted sometimes male, sometimes female, sometimes androgynous. And she, I'm going to use the pronoun she because that's my pronoun that I use. So. She's just has no limits to who she is. And that's one of the things that we learn from the bodhisattvas is that you can be whatever you have to be in order to be helpful. You can take on any form that you need to take form. So I can be very stuck in who I think I am, and I can only do something from that place. But right, you don't have to do that. You can break through those kinds of things. And of course, if her hands are less always, and sometimes she has two hands, one head, like us. But even with two hands, her hands are always open and giving. And sometimes she has many arms. Now, sometimes 4, 8, 18, sometimes 1,000, right? So no limits to what she can be. And so I don't know about you, my first my first encounter with that image was the cover of Ms. Magazine. You remember the very first cover of Ms. Magazine had a woman with eight arms, and she's holding like a frying pan and an iron and a steering wheel and a typewriter, and she has all these arms and she has all these things that, you know, women need, you know, have to be all the time, which was kind of making this point, but it's also making the point that you can be all those things. We can be all those things. As women, we know we have to do that, but and she's wearing high heels. And she has twins in her womb that you can see through her clothes. So she's got it all going on. And you know, and everybody, men, women, all, we all can do that. We can all aspire to that. Because in order to be on this bodhisattva path, we have to have this kind of this imagination. And you know, we make impossible vows, right? We don't say, I vow to save, no, however numerous all beings are, I'll save maybe 20 a year. I don't know. Get back to me in 6 months. We'll kind of have to adjust that. No, we vow these impossible vows so that we don't have to limit ourselves. Because if we do limit ourselves, then, you know, well, obviously we're limited, not very much. And if you think that we can't do it because it's impossible, you know, we just gives us that energy to do everything that we can. Skip down because we have so those thousand arms. I'll go back to those thousand arms and an eye on each one, right? So just opening up these senses to the whole world, seeing with a thousand eyes and hearing all cries, seeing all suffering. And, just open to the world, fully aware. And as Joy pointed out to me, these thousand, these eyes on your hands help you see what you do. That's not my hands. My husband, whenever I lose something, my husband says, watch your hands. You won't lose things. I thought, wow, if I had eyes on my hands, I would never lose my keys. That would be so good. So, but that helps me, like, see what, but we also, you know, in a bigger sense, have to see what we do. Right? We have to see ourselves on that path and the limits that we have. So that's where I've been especially aware lately, which is inspiring me to talk about this. So watch yourself, and we can help each other. You know, we can help each other with that, watching ourselves. So my favorite story about Avalokiteshvara, right, is that she was saving many beings from suffering, taking them out of samsara into the pure land of liberation. She saw that as fast as she could do that, people were coming in and filling those very spaces that she was in. Thought she was creating. And that just felt very familiar. Like, have you had a job that was like that, right? The more you do, the more you have to do. And it just seems, you know, like, it, you know, you could get down at that point. But she doesn't get down. She does, actually, her head explodes or cracks open from the grief of it. But she's not all poor me about it, right? She just does that. And that also feels familiar. Your head going to explode because of your job and what you're doing in that moment. And it felt like that a lot when I was a teacher in this new school. It just, your head, at the end of the day, your head felt like my head would explode. But see, I didn't let it explode. I'd go home and have a glass of wine or something, right? I would back away from it. I'd back away from that feeling and try to numb it because I was afraid of what would happen. And this is a fear, this is one of the big reasons that we have these limits, because we think we're limited. Of course, we have to take care of our bodies and ourselves. That's number one of our vow. But, you know, in my case, I'd be afraid that I wouldn't be able to go to work the next day if I let my head explode. But if I did, who knows what would happen? Because it wasn't that, it was just an ongoing cycle of, you know, every day. So what would have happened, I wonder? So what happens to her is that Amitabha Buddha provides her with more heads. So it explodes 10 times, and she gets 10 more heads. She has 11 heads, right? You've seen that step, some statue sometimes. Shoji has statues like that, where she has 11 heads. And 11 heads are better than one. So I've heard. So she could work. She could continue her work. She could do it better than she did it before. Because now with 11 faces, she has all these different ways to go about helping people. So she may have been going originally with all the with just compassion, just a compassionate face. But sometimes people don't want to go, right? They're stuck in that samsara. Maybe you need a little bit of a stern face. Maybe you need fangs sometimes. So she has all these different faces to deal with different people in different situations. And again, that breaking through this limited sense. So there's a saying that really intrigued me when I heard it. I'm sure you've heard it. There's controversy on who originally said it, so I'll just skip that part. But and it's usually in a Christian context that we are human beings having a spiritual experience, not spiritual beings having that. I'm sorry. We're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. And I think this is a really helpful way to think about the Bodhisattva path in our context. So if you think of, you know, we are not human beings trying to be Bodhisattvas, we're Bodhisattvas having a human experience. And so people come to me sometimes as the Buddhist chaplain and say, you know, I want to be more spiritual. How do I be more spiritual? Help me be more spiritual. Because they want to, and this is the trouble with that, is that you think you have to get something, you have to strive for it. It's hard to be spiritual. It's hard to get to reach that place of being a spiritual person. But really, I think being the spiritual person, the spiritual being, is the easy part. You just float around without a body, full of love, no hindrances. You know, and then maybe you say, oh, look at those human beings over there. They're having such a hard time. So maybe because I'm full of love and forgiveness and goodwill, I should go down and be a human being and help them out. So you get born, and then bam, you're just in a body. You're in a body. And you get slapped. There's pain, there's suffering in this body, you're hungry. And then, you know, somebody fools you and feeds you. It's like, oh, there's pleasure in this. There's pain. There's pleasure. And you completely forget that you were what you were. And because now you're in this body and you feel separate. Because that's this experience in this human body. So you feel separate. And then there's all sorts of, you get older and there's expectations and conflicts, and language and mental anguish. And you forget, you know, you forget your Bodhisattva. And you just get totally caught up in the human experience. You're grabby. even those little fetuses, those pictures of a fetus, they have curled, right? They have curled fingers. So there you are. But then sometimes you remember. You have that experience. A lot of you speak of, I've heard people talk about experiences that they've had where they remember, and a lot of you have some kind of experiences that brought you here. People in other traditions have these experiences where they remember. And then once you remember, navigating this whole human experience becomes a lot easier. Because you can be aware. Like, yes, we have to go do this thing, but really this doesn't matter so much, and this is what really matters. And then you can start to let go of those things that you, as a human experience, in the human experience, me, you know, are very important, like money and self-preservation. And, you know, we don't want to offer compliments because that person's you're competing with them. And you don't want them to feel good about themselves, right? Because you want them to feel better about themselves so that you can take over. But then when you remember, that's when you can start to let that all go. So Yoku recommended this book by Norman Fisher, The World Could Be Otherwise. And I recommend that book. He speaks about the kind of imagination needed for the bodhisattva path. And he details about the paramitas and use them in ways to help cut through all that clinging and why we forget and what to do. And there's actually special meditations for all those things. It's really a great book for both beginners and old timers. So, but you have to find your own little practice. So one of his practices, for instance, is to always in the airport bathroom, because you go in airports a lot, to wipe off the starting with these little things, because it's these smallest little things, these things where you just give somebody some money, give somebody a compliment, offering something, doing something for people, right? All the way we just kind of let go and offer ourselves, which feels so good. I don't know why it doesn't feel good to be grabby, and yet, you know, sometimes I continue to do that. But when it feels so good not to just open up and give what people need, because it doesn't, you know, it's not so hard. It's just not so hard. Why don't we do it? That these small things create a shift, and that these shifts create bigger shifts. If you compliment somebody, then suddenly they just feel good. Suddenly they've been feeling terrible for a long time, and you said this thing, like, oh, they feel a little lighter, and they offer it to somebody else. And of course, then big shifts happen. Just tell this real quick story. The book begins with this great story of French poet Robert Du. So now I can't remember his name. Let me just tell the story. You can tell me who it was. So he was during World War II, and he was fighting in the resistance, and he's captured, and he's Jewish, so he's being sent to. So he's in a concentration camp. He's being sent to the gas chamber with other prisoners, and they all know that's where they're going, and they're resigned, and the mood is very grim, and they get there, and the guards are also, you know, just they're kind of silent and just doing what they need to do to take march these soldiers to the gas chamber, and the poet turns around and he grabs somebody's hand and he looks at the palm, he's reading her palm, and he says, "Oh, this is amazing! You're going to have a very long life and wealth and three children and a beautiful wife." And then perhaps another person, same thing. Oh, this is wonderful. And everybody's grabbing everybody's palms and reading them. And they're just laughing. And then patting each other on the back. And then the guards are so confused that they don't know what to do. And they just let them back. They don't execute them. They just call it off because they didn't want to do it. They were in this grim reality that was equally absurd, that they had to do this thing, that they had to take people because they're Jewish to this room where they're going to be killed. They didn't really want to do it. That was just their norm. They did it every day and they were going to do it, but suddenly a big shift. So that's how he starts the book. So it's a, you should want to read more about how to do what. So these big shifts, these little shifts to these big shifts. That's until we have saved all beings and extinguished all illusions and mastered all dharmas. Continue on our endless, wherever endless it is, to walk together.
This has been a Zen Study Society podcast. If you found it to be of interest, please consider making a donation by visiting zenstudies.org/donate. Thank you for listening.